Okay. The Senate Committee on Rules will come to order. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to make several announcements today to explain the processes we've developed to continue our essential work during the pandemic. For those of you familiar with this process, we appreciate your patience while I go through it again for those who may be tuning in for the first time. I'm going to cover some of the technical side of things for the day. In response to the COVID-19 emergency and to protect the public, senators, and Senate staff, we must limit non-essential gatherings and adhere to social distancing. In compliance with state and local orders, the Senate will be holding this essential hearing, and we've made necessary adjustments to normal practices in order to ensure that the public has access to the legislative process while conducting the hearing in a way that protects the health and safety of the public and our employees. To allow the public access, we've admitted members of the public to this hearing to the extent that social distancing requirements allow, and we will be using a teleconference service for those individuals who wish to testify today. So for the individuals wishing to provide public comment, the participant toll-free number and the access code is posted on our committee website. I'm going to announce it now and again before we turn to public comments and that portion of the agenda. So get ready with your pens, everyone, if you're tuning in. Today's participant number, for those of you wishing to write it down, is 877-226-8189. 877-226-8189, and you need an access code, which is 287-6059. One more time, 287-6059 is our access code. When we move to public comment, a moderator will identify you individually, will open your line, and at that time you may address the committee. Please note that in order for us to hear you clearly and to avoid feedback, you must mute the device you are watching the hearing on prior to giving testimony over the phone. It's important that we hear from you, so we thank you for your patience. I will maintain decorum during the hearing, as is customary, and any individuals who are disruptive may be removed from the remote meeting service or have their connections muted. While every effort has been made to streamline the hearing process and conduct our hearing in as close to the same manner as is customary, there may be some lag times for participants adjusting to the new online tools. So again, let's be patient so everyone can be heard. Also, on behalf of our court reporter, I'm going to ask all speakers, my colleagues, and witnesses alike to speak slowly and clearly. Before we begin today's agenda, we need to establish a quorum. Our vice chair will be a little bit late today, and we'll accommodate when she arrives so that if she has questions or comments for our conferees, she'll be able to do that. But she will be here today. I want to make sure everyone knows that. So a reminder to my colleagues, you'll need to turn on your microphones for roll call and every time that we vote. So with that, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Grove?
Aye.
Or present?
Grove, present. Camlogger?
Here.
Camlogger here. Laird?
Here.
Laird here. Bates? Atkins?
Here.
Atkins here.
First, let's go ahead and take up item two. Again, we'll leave it open for the vice chair when she arrives. And that would be item two, the ratification of the Subcommittee on the Clean Energy Future will be composed of five members, and the appointments of Senator Becker as chair, Senators Dolly, Gonzalez, Minn, and Stern to fill all vacancies.
I move the ratification.
Thank you, Senator Laird. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Grove?
Aye.
Grove, aye. Camlogger?
Aye.
Camlogger, aye. Laird?
Aye.
Laird, aye. Bates? Atkins?
Aye.
Atkins, aye.
And we will leave that open for our vice chair when she arrives. So now we're going to turn, and you will remember or remind me, Madam Secretary, because I always forget that. I know that you will. We will turn to governor's appointees required to appear. That is items 1A and 1B, two appointments to the California Community Colleges Board of Governors. They are Ms. Jennifer L. Perry and Mr. Blas Villalobos, and they are with us on the screen waiting patiently. Thank you so much for your patience. We will take up introductions in order that I stated, which is the order of the file, beginning with Ms. Perry and then Mr. Villalobos. And after both of you have given your introductions and opening comments, I'll go to my colleagues for questions and comments. So, Ms. Perry, we will begin with you. And if you would like to introduce anyone that's with you or that you want to acknowledge and then make your opening comments, please go right ahead. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Atkins. My name is Jennifer L. Perry, and I want to thank you all for this opportunity to be here today. As I look back on the process of being reconfirmed to this role, it's really been a wonderful way to look back and see the road, the very profound road that the community colleges have traveled over the last 5 years, and certainly the challenges that we faced. But what I've seen is a lot of visionary leadership on the part of the Chancellor's office that is really reworking and rethinking and redirecting the system so that it more fully meets the needs of the 1.2 million students that we serve. And it has been an energetic and a challenging role, but I think the vision, and literally the vision for success that has been crafted, is one that best and will best serve our students for the years to come. It's recognized the changes in the state, the changes in the demographics, and the changes in the needs of our students, and really sort of reframed the whole so that students are looked at in a holistic manner, and in a way that will really ensure their educational success. And then, not to take up too much time, but one of the things that's been great about this process is it's also occasion for me to take a look back and realize what an extraordinary culmination of public service work that I've done in the past this is. I worked at a Head Start. I work currently with youth and foster care. And being able to be part of a system that really recognizes the resilience and the hope and the potential in every single youth and adult in California is something that I'm really proud to be a part of. And it seems, from my standpoint, to be able to do the work that I do sort of writ large, in particular as there are now about 40,000 foster youth in the community college system, up from years past. And I've seen firsthand how impactful the community colleges are for those youth, and how the community colleges are their gateway to a better future, and have provided support systems and an open door policy that is really going to make a significant difference for these youth. And I've seen it firsthand. Our daughter, who we adopted from foster care, was a student at Santa Monica Community College and used it to transfer to UC Davis. So I see it every day in the work that I do in firsthand. So again, thank you for the opportunity. And I am honored to be able to serve the students and the adults of the state and the state in such a manner.
Thank you very much for those opening comments. Mr. Villalobos, do you want to also acknowledge anyone that you would like and make some opening comments? Welcome.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Dear members of the Senate Committee on Rules, my name is Dr. Bob Villalobos, and it is a privilege to be here today. I'd like to tell you just a little bit about me. After serving in the Marine Corps for 4 years, I had a very important decision to make, and that was to either reenlist or leave the military and go back to school. However, after 4 years in the service, I was not sure college would be the right place for me. And that is when a friend mentioned Long Beach City College, and after a short visit, I realized LBCC would be the perfect place for me to begin my academic career. I have since established a career working with veterans and military families, and as a product of our community college system, I can honestly say I would not be where I am today without the support and education I received as a student veteran at Long Beach City College. Serving on the Board of Governors is an honor and a privilege, and I take it very seriously. And I will continue to do my best representing our student veterans and military families throughout our system. And I want to thank you for taking the time to meet with us this afternoon and for the opportunity to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Doctor, please forgive me for missing your title. I know that it was well earned. So
No, that's okay. Thank you. My apologies.
Senator Laird, let's go ahead and start with you if you are prepared.
I am. Thank you, Madam Chair. And let me just say, I know this hearing was postponed, and I met with you a number of weeks ago, and it was really helpful meeting with both of you, and I'm really comfortable. But I thought I'd put one question just sort of to each of you out of the meeting, and to Jennifer Perry. This is a reappointment for you, and you have already served 6 years on the board. And we talked about what you've learned over 6 years and how it's going to hone in on your focus for the next term. And I thought I'd give you a chance to speak to that in public. How would you talk about what you've learned during your service and how it's going to focus you going forward?
Thank you, Senator. And it was a pleasure to meet with you. Was it a couple of weeks ago? Whenever it was. And thank you for the question. I mean, the truth is, you know, the early part of the 6 years was a huge learning curve. And I think Blas and I have discussed this. I mean, the system, as you know, is complex and intricate and multifaceted. So part of really some of the great part that I take away from that first 6 years is I understand the system so much better. And that will serve me well in terms of looking forward to what I want to focus on. As I think I've mentioned to you before, I think what I'm really proud of and was lucky enough to serve on the board at the time when we were creating the Vision for Success and implementing sort of our DEI structure and priorities for the years to come. So those are on their way, but there's still a tremendous amount of work to be done. There already was. Obviously, the pandemic has slowed down the progress of some of the big initiatives that we've undertaken. But I think, you know, as our Vice Chancellor Daisy Gonzalez said to us in a recent memo, we still need to keep laser focused on our students in spite of all that. And I think so far, we are doing a pretty good job of that, given everything that's going on. From a personal standpoint, my focus really will continue to be those 40-some-odd thousand youth in foster care that are currently attending our community colleges. There's a lot of good work that can be done, that has been done, and we need to expand some programs like Next Up to drop the age for eligibility, to expand the program to more campuses. We need to increase our communications with those foster youth because we need to figure out ways to welcome them, to make sure it's okay to be known. We are very lucky in our vice chancellor to have a former foster youth, and we have coming onto the Board of Governors a young man who's supposed to be, who by all accounts is very dynamic, and he's mentioned, and I think he's right, you know, part of our role is to actually increase communications with foster youth so that they feel comfortable accessing the students that the services that we have there for them. So I think that looking forward will be a big part of my role. And also, as I mentioned to you, ensuring that CalBright, which has regained its footing to a great degree, continues on that course, because I think it has a lot to offer the students of California.
Well, thank you for that response. I appreciate it. And you did mention a number of things, including CalBright, that we talked about during the session. And I know we also talked about the funding formula and the fact that that's going to need to be dealt with, given some of the colleges that are in a hold harmless stage, and that we're going to have to work on that going forward. And I appreciated both of your comments on that. And for Dr. Villalobos, just as Ms. Perry talked about her experience with foster care being a personal experience that she brings to the board, when we talked, your personal experience as a veteran and in veterans programs seemed like it was something that you brought to the board in terms of the number of veterans that are in the community college system. And I did enjoy our brief moment where you talked about people with no grades being challenged in getting VA benefits, and you didn't understand you were talking to the one member of the committee that has a four-year college degree without getting a single letter grade, and you walked right into that, and you were very, you had aplomb when you realized that. So talk about your experience as a veteran and with veterans programs and what that prompts you to do as a community college governor.
Yes, sir. Well, first and foremost, I can tell you that our community colleges are doing an incredible job working with our veterans and military families When I first started at Long Beach City College in the spring of 2004, veteran resource centers were not a thing per se. We had no veteran resource centers on campus at the time. Those did not come until way after. But I was lucky enough and blessed to be able to see them evolve and turn into what they are today, which is a space for veterans and military families to really get together and talk to someone about their benefits, apply for their benefits, and get to know their veterans and military family members in the community college. As a veteran in the community college system, I can tell you that my benefits allowed me to go back to school. The support that I received at the community college really influenced my career path because I was able to meet hundreds of veterans, and many of them were actually struggling with mental health and housing issues. And that is what spiked my interest in the veteran space and working with veterans and military families in the first place. That, as you know, has evolved into a career working with veterans and military families. But it also has opened my eyes to some of the difficult challenges that our veterans are facing in the system. We're talking about veterans and military families who are struggling with mental health issues, housing issues, employment issues. And my goal for this next reappointment is to continue to focus on working with community organizations and the veteran resource centers at the community colleges to make sure that we are able to provide resources for veterans and their families as they are needed. My goal has always been to engage with the veteran population and to be able to provide services before these needs become a crisis. Fortunately, what I've seen throughout my career several times is that we start to engage a population, in this case, veterans, for example, once they are in crisis. And my goal has always been to be proactive and identify those needs ahead of time and really be more proactive and address those needs before they get to a point where now they're in crisis mode. That's why I'm very thankful to have been reappointed to the board. I'm looking forward to continuing to work with the veteran resource centers and the veterans and military families throughout our system and to continue to identify any challenges they're facing and address those needs.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate both your comments. Look forward to supporting you both.
Thank you, Senator. Let me ask, Madam Vice Chair, are you ready or do you want me to give you a little more time?
I'm good. Cause
go right ahead.
I am on, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Sorry. I'm a little discombobulated, guys. I apologize. I just came from session and I have to go back, so I missed your introductory comments, but I wanted to share mine with you. Initially, I think the community college system is probably one of the best things California has done in expanding it. It has provided me an incredible opportunity to not lose a year at college, making my parents very happy when I was able to go community college and pick up a semester because I'd been out of the country doing as a foreign exchange student. So that was great. And then when I returned, I was able to pick up some additional units also to move forward in my career as a social worker. So it's just great. And looking at your resumes and hearing actually your resumes and knowing the time that you, Ms. Perry, and you, Dr. Villalobos, have been involved is obviously something that I'm very supportive of and supportive of you. The questions I was going to ask were about the foster youth and also about the Veterans Resource Center and what's going on there. I know my community college, Saddleback Community College in South Orange County, has been very involved. I see you nodding your head, so been great. And also the workforce investment, the workforce college, the workforce, excuse me, the workforce agenda that they have, that the classes, excuse me, to help with that, certainly very important for both our foster youth and our veterans. So that would, I could let you off the hook and not ask any questions because they were asked specifically, but I was very interested in that because I know the community college has been really, I think, very fundamental in taking that on as we've seen people transition into new careers, and especially after the pandemic, the opportunity for retraining and, you know, re-entering, and for our veterans, certainly, and for our foster kids. So let me start with you, Ms. Perry, and then Dr. Villalobos. Just give me your thoughts on whether we're meeting targets on that whole component of what our community colleges have taken on to actually provide the opportunity to transition into new careers if the one you had didn't work out, or we've lost basically an opportunity for employment, and then what's your thoughts on that? Because there's an issue regarding accountability and whether we're meeting the targets, I guess better said the goals, that certainly up that you all would have, and how do you feel about the colleges as a whole across the state that are focusing and meeting some of the goals that you would hope would be attained?
Thank you, Senator Thane. Thank you for the question. I mean, from a foster youth standpoint, we've made great strides. There has been a tremendous increase in the number of services available to foster youth. We've even renamed some of the programs from CAFES to Next Step. And there's been an ongoing recognition that those students need both the academic opportunity, but to be bolstered by supports that recognize the particular hardships they've faced in their young lives. So I think we've laid a great foundation. As I mentioned, Next Step is at 45 colleges. You know, we hope that it'll be at 90 colleges. It can serve more and more youth. And I think since we have a significant population of foster youth in the state of California, certainly we need more services to serve those youth. But we have laid the foundation and the work that we've done, and moving forward, I see great promise there. To your question about workforce development, I do again think that we're on a really strong track moving to meet the needs of those, I think it's about 1 million sort of middle income, higher income jobs that will be needed to be filled in the state of California in the next 5 or so years. And what we've been doing from a workforce development standpoint, and focusing a lot on healthcare and hospitality issues, but creating the consortia between the colleges and employers in 7 districts, looking to create an actual pipeline that will train the student in a trade that matches the employer's need. And you're seeing a lot of success in that area. You're seeing students in some of the colleges that are being entered into jobs that are paying 9% and more of what they had previously earned. And you're seeing them, on the other side of it, help the state of California by filling that very large niche that needs to be filled for a particular type of job. So I think we've had about 5,000 completions in that area. Again, really good start. There's so much more we can do, but I do see a lot of promise in the workforce development area.
Thank you. And Dr. Villalobos, your thoughts for our veterans on that?
Absolutely. And first and foremost, I have to tell you that out of all the community colleges I've visited, I can tell you Saddleback is doing an amazing job. Along with others, but Saddleback is doing an amazing job serving the veteran population. I want to be fair to all the community colleges I have not visited yet, but just from personal experience working with Terrence at Saddleback, and, you know, several individuals at Long Beach City College, Cerritos, Cypress, LA City College, I can tell you that our veteran resource centers are doing an amazing job working with the veteran population and their military families. It is not uncommon for community college veteran resource centers to have partnerships with local organizations that allow them to provide additional resources for our veterans. So we're talking about mental health, housing, and employment resources. We have veterans who are graduating with a trade, and they are able to connect to a local organization that can place them into a job thanks to partnerships created by the VRCs. We're also working with VRCs that are identifying additional needs, right? There are organizations that provide free mental health services for our veterans and their families, and they're connecting with all these organizations to, in a proactive way, engage the veteran population that may be in need of services. And that is something that I'm very proud about our colleges, because it takes a lot of extra work. This is not something that is in someone's job description. This is really literally someone taking additional time out of their schedule to engage with local organizations and identify the resources that our veterans need and make sure that our veterans get those resources. Having organizations come to the campus and spend some time every week, like they do at Saddleback, for example, and be available for our veterans and military families for those resources. It has given our veterans, along with the GI Bill, the opportunity to attend a community college and transfer to our four-year schools and graduate and find a great job. So I can tell you on the workforce side, employment has been a big challenge. And while I worked for the city of LA, we had the 10,000 Strong Initiative, and our goal was to get 10,000 veterans back to work. And we were able to do that by placing over 12,000 veterans back to work. And I can tell you that the community colleges played a vital role in that. We're talking to veterans who are graduating and were in need of jobs and careers, and the local organizations were able to step up and place them into those jobs. So honestly, I mean, the work that our community college VRC is doing is amazing. I really applaud the work that Terrence and his team are doing at Saddleback. And I hope that we can replicate that throughout the entire system.
Well, thank you for those answers. And you will both have my strong support. And again, you're so lucky to be serving on this board for such a great agency across our state, the community colleges. By the way, I did get those extra units at Long Beach City College, by the way. So anyway, take care, and thanks again for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Senator Grove.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your service to our community college board, and Mr. Villalobos, thank you for your service to our country. Absolutely. I did have questions about the same questions that my colleagues asked, so I'll ask a different one. You know, recently there's been a lot of news, especially in Cal Matters, regarding bots assuming positions for college classes and applying for grants. The news articles goes on that after this particular incident was brought up by a professor to the organization, and they checked, did the background or did some investigating, they found out that there were 116 college systems that say they had a spike in cyber attacks. The bots were filling up classes and taking slots from real students. It seemed to be well orchestrated and analytically led the assault of weakness in the system. It says 65,000 applications were taken from one California Student Aid Commission. They appeared to be fake. There were others where 70,000 from another college were targeted, Contra Costa, 500 accounts deemed to be fake, 75,000 from the Executive Dean of Institutional Effectiveness at San Jacinto College in Riverside. They estimated 400,000 fake applications in 2020 from Siskiyou County, 1 million in Pell Grants in the summer, identifying some 300,000 fake student accounts where resources have been allocated to these fake students, or bots is what they're calling them. Community College will receive about $4.3 billion, which $1.75 billion will go directly to students. Number one, were you guys aware of this? And number two, can you tell us what you're doing to combat this fraud of taxpayers' money? We have a huge EDD scandal. We don't need a community college grant scandal.
You want? I can start, and Bless, you want to fill in? And thank you for taking the time to meet with us earlier, and for bringing up this issue, because yes, we are well aware. Our vice chancellor, acting chancellor, Gonzalez, brought this to our attention immediately and started to outline the steps that she is taking across the system to address this issue, which obviously none of us want to have happen. We need to address it now and strongly and firmly. She's already working with the Inspector General at the Department, the Federal Department of Education. They are looking at new data reporting from the community college on up, looking at modernizing our CCC apply system, taking immediate and strong steps to address and root out this fraud. Because you're right, no one wants their tax dollars going toward anything other than the students for whom they were allotted. So The Board of Governors has been made very aware of this, and I understand we will have a lengthy and in-depth presentation at our upcoming meeting, so that we can continue to look at this system, look at this problem, and make sure it is adequately addressed.
Thank you. Mr. Villalobos, did you have a comment to add?
I do, yes. And first and foremost, Senator Grove, thank you for your service as well. As Member Perry mentioned, this is an item of the utmost importance. Having worked in the nonprofit sector for so many years, I can tell you that no one wants to see any of our taxpayer dollars go to waste, especially in a fraudulent way. I am right there with Member Perry on her comments. I know that the Chancellor's Office is monitoring the situation, and we will continue to do that as well. And we hope to get to the bottom of it and, you know, address it as soon as possible to make sure that this doesn't continue. And most importantly, to make sure that our students are not impacted by it as well.
Thank you very much. I know it's not completely in your guys' control, both you and Member Perry. It's not completely in your control, but would you support an audit in this situation to do a complete investigation so that we could actually find out if there is fraud taking place? And I mean, we obviously know there's fraud taking place, but that we've uncovered and loss of dollars, and how we could the independent auditor could possibly make recommendations to prevent this fraud from happening in the future?
I think, Senator, that's an excellent question. I would have to say this is so new. It would be out of my purview to comment on whether there should be an audit. I think, you know, give us a month or so to really fully, or a couple of months to really look at this and digest and really understand what's happening. So I think it would be premature for me in terms of where we are, in terms of understanding the challenge, and also to answer that question in the affirmative or the negative at this juncture. And also, let me take this opportunity to tell Member Villalobos that I will refer to him that way from the remainder of the meeting. Apologies. We've connected a lot through this process, so apologies for the informality.
I don't think he would he minds. I think it's more personal. We do have a protocol here to, you know, Member Perry, Member Villalobos, but I mean, there's people. I mean, the other day I was calling somebody Galgi, and her name's Galgiani, but I've always called her Galgi, you know. So it's just a friendly, it shows closeness and personality. So I don't think I'd worry about it. And I'm not speaking for you, Mr. Villalobos.
Didn't she move Galgi?
I did.
You most certainly can. I agree with Member Perry. We've talked so much this last few months, just preparing for this as well. So we have become quite close, despite COVID and the distance and not being able to meet in person. But I also agree with her on her comments regarding it being premature for us to give you a response right now. Again, you know, 1 or 2 months from now, we'll be able to assess the situation and really come back to you with a more concrete answer in this topic.
I respect that response, and I thank you very much for answering my questions. I enjoyed spending time with both of you the other day, especially with your comments on COVID. I didn't bring up this issue that I brought up publicly today because I wasn't aware of it until this afternoon, or yesterday, actually. So thank you, and I look forward to your guys' confirmation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kamlager.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. Well, as someone who once served on a board of trustees for a community college district, I have much respect for you both. I also believe you both to be ably qualified for these appointments, and I have no questions, since many of the questions I would have asked have already been posed to you. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And thank you for your service. Then as now, I think I only have one question. I, like my colleagues, really respect this system, feel like we have some excellent examples in my own community in San Diego from the community college system. It is a very large system with over 2 million students, I believe. And in terms of the representation, we have obviously urban areas like the Los Angeles area, the Bay Area, you know, San Diego, while we have 8 or 9, it's still smaller than I think the Bay Area as a whole and Los Angeles. But I also know that we have a number of the community colleges throughout the rest of the state and other counties. So I guess I would ask you to indulge me and help me understand your perspective as you approach the whole system and what the needs of some of the community colleges are and maybe some of our more rural communities and counties versus, say, our larger urban areas. And as a certainly a governor on the Board of Governors, you know, how do you look at that? Just it's not a direct specific question, but it's more what's your philosophy on representation for areas broader than the area you might represent for the whole system? So, Ms. Perry, I'll start with you and then go to Dr. Villalobos.
Thank you, Senator. And I actually think one of the strengths of the community college system is exactly that. It's extraordinary breadth and diversity. No one college is exactly like the other. You know, within LA, you have a college that has a great aeronautics program. In the Valley, you have one that has a program that's working with Tesla on cars. And the more rural areas that each, what's been really wonderful about the way the system works, and sometimes challenging because you have 115 physical entities that are serving very different communities and very different needs, but the way the system is structured, it does to a large degree enable each college to develop plans and services that serve the specific community in which they sit. And I think that is a real strength. And so each one of them has a blueprint that looks different. And each one of them has a blueprint that serves different needs. And so I think that strengthens the system overall. It may, on occasion, pose some governance challenges, but I think we've figured out how to work with all of the colleges in a positive way. And again, you know, I've seen from my visits to the colleges in LA, again, each one has a different strength. There's an extraordinary culinary program at one. There's an extraordinary nursing program at another. So each one is responsive and responsive to the needs of the community in which they sit.
Thank you. Dr. Villalobos?
Absolutely, and I would say that as it relates to veterans, you know, unfortunately, many of the issues that our veterans, general veteran population faces, our student veterans are facing as well. So any challenges in the rural areas our veterans face, any community college with student veterans in rural areas will face some of the same challenges. What we have seen in the last 18 months, however, is that many of our nonprofit organizations have been able to transition from an in-person service model to an online service model, which has allowed for many of these community colleges, veteran resource centers, to really reach out to the organizations that can provide support for our veterans and their families. And this applies to federal organizations as well. We are seeing an incredible number of veterans receiving services through telehealth. If anything, I would say, you know, during the last 18 months, take a positive out of everything horrible that has happened is that organizations have been able to step up and reach out to the population that would normally not be able to receive services due to the distance from their office, and they've been able to provide those services online. But as Member Perry mentioned, every community college is different. You know, like I said earlier, some of the community colleges I visited, or at least all of them, have a very good Veterans Resource Center, but each one is different, and each one offers resources and services that are unique to that veteran and military family population in their area. So it's always fascinating to go and visit different community colleges and take a look at the different resources they offer for the veterans and their families, based on what the local resources are and the resources that community college provides.
Thank you. I just note with a more than either 116, if not a few more community colleges and a board of governors, it's a very different animal than, say, CSU or UC. And so the whole issue and discussion of governance has to be looked at probably very differently. So I appreciate your comments. I think now we're going to go ahead and move to members of the public, and we are going to start with members of the public that want to testify in support. And before I start right here in room 3191, I'm going to, as a reminder for witnesses that want to comment via phone, that the participant toll-free number, again, is 877-226-8189, 877-226-8189. The access code is 287-6059, 287-6059. So folks might want to start teeing up right now. I'm going to begin right here with witnesses in support in room 3191. I actually don't see anyone here to testify publicly. So we only have one room today, not two, as is typical. We have other hearings in process. So we're going to move right on to the teleconference system. And let me welcome our moderator for today and ask the moderator to prompt individuals waiting to speak in support.
Thank you. If you do wish to speak in support of this at this time, you may press 1 followed by 0 using your telephone. Again, that's 1 followed by 0, please.
And as we wait on people to tee up, I'm going to remind witnesses that when you speak, please provide your name, your organization, if any, the position on the appointment, and again, on behalf of our court reporter, please speak slowly and clearly. Mr. Moderator, going back to you.
Thank you. At this time, there are no lines in queue.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let me then come back into 3191. I actually still see no one here in room 3191 that would be in opposition. So, Mr. Moderator, I'm going to come back to you, hoping people remember the number is 877-226-8189. The access code is 287-6059. Back to you, Mr. Moderator. Opposition.
Thank you. To speak in opposition at this time, you may press 1 followed by 0 using your telephone. That is 1, then 0. And we have no lines in queue.
Mr. Moderator, thank you. Your job was pretty easy today, but I guarantee you that may not be true going forward. So thank you so much for being with us today and prepared to help. And to the governors in waiting, let me just say that's a very good sign, frankly, because people do call when they have opinions. So that obviously speaks to the fact that you are prepared and ready to get back to work on this. And with that, I am seeing that Senator Laird has his light and mic on and ready to go.
I would move the confirmation of both these candidates.
And seeing that people are fine with those nominees being taken together, let me ask Madam Secretary to please call the roll.
Grove?
Aye.
Grove, aye. Kamlager?
Aye.
Kamlager, aye. Laird?
Aye.
Laird, aye. Bates?
Aye.
Bates, aye. Atkins?
Aye.
Atkins, aye. 5-0.
That is 5-0, unanimous. This will move on to the Senate floor for confirmation. Let me congratulate both of you and thank you for your service.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to continue to serve.
Wonderful. Have a great rest of your day. Madam Secretary, we have one item open, and that is the subcommittee ratification for Clean Energy Future. Call the roll.
Bates?
Aye.
Bates, aye. 5-0.
Thank you. That is 5-0. And we will now, let me thank everyone for your assistance and patience today. And to all the individuals we didn't have anyone participate publicly today, but if you weren't able to and you want to, you still may submit your comments or suggestions in writing to the Rules Committee. Visit our website for instructions. Again, your comments and your suggestions are really important to us. We want to make sure that your testimony is included in the official hearing records. So with that, thank everyone. The Senate Committee on Rules will now move to executive session.